From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We've got a lot going on this hour, and our connection later this hour is going to be made tonight. A lot happening tonight in Fairport. There is a rally in front of the Minerva DeLand School starting at 5:50 tonight, and then a forum on education that's going to feature lawmakers, superintendents, retired superintendents, New York State Teacher of the Year, a couple of them, and many others. And we're going to be talking about what's happening tonight in education there later this hour. We're also going to be talking about how the Warner School of Education at the University of Rochester is addressing the question, why teach? That's all coming up later in the hour, but a brief interlude to welcome my colleague Beth Adams to the studio, because I want our listeners to know that 24 hours from now, we're shaking it up just a little bit here. And this isn't anything, you know, this isn't going to rock anyone's world, but I think it should be exciting. Hi, Beth. How are you?
It's good to see you. Thanks for having me.
Now, 24 hours from now, the noon hour on Friday, what is going on, Beth?
We are very excited. We are going to introduce a pilot show. We hope it becomes something more than just a pilot. We hope it becomes a regular show called Unleashed, and it's about our pets, their behavior, their health, the animal-human connection, everything about animals that makes them special, Evan, because we know, and you're a pet person too, they play a big role in our lives. And we're finding out the reaction that we're getting to this show, it hasn't even aired yet, and we're hearing from dozens of people in the community. We didn't realize it would be quite this popular, but we're grateful for it.
Who do you have on with you?
I am going to be co-hosting for this show with Dr. Eric Harima. He's the head of Penfield Veterinary Hospital, born and raised in Irondequoit, a great animal lover himself. And he's going to take callers talking about mostly about animal health. And we're also going to be featuring different features on the show. We have some field reports on some pretty remarkable animals around here. One of them has his own Facebook page with thousands of followers, has been featured on the BBC. We're talking about Disco the parakeet. Are you a friend of Disco?
I actually had not heard of Disco the parakeet.
Oh, wait until you hear Disco's story. It will floor you. It will floor you. Talk about, he should be on Letterman. Maybe he has with pet tricks. And we're going to also hear about how to train your dog not to jump on people, just for starters. That's one of the behavior lessons that we'll get, and we hope to have many more if the show continues.
Are you going to divide it into a war between dog people and cat people?
No, you know,
see,
and
I'm
I've
both.
Never.
I'm both.
I've never understood that. People will say, well, Beth, you're a cat person. I don't think it's either or. I love them all. I happen to specialize in cats, you know, because I'm surrounded by felines, but I love all of them.
I also think it's simply easier to own cats, which is why
yes.
we have owned cats for years.
Yeah. A little more maintenance-free than a dog is.
Yeah. Though, interestingly enough, interesting you say maintenance-free. I would like to call the show tomorrow and ask some questions of Dr. Harima, because I'm one of those pet owners who recently had to make some decisions. And when you're looking at bills that can get into four figures, mm-hmm. I am not questioning whatsoever the validity of doing most of the procedures. I think I just want to be a pet owner who feels like, yes, this is necessary. For example, dental work later in life.
Can be a big one.
We just spent a lot of money on dental work for our two girls, the cats, and
did they have any teeth extracted?
They did.
Because
they each had
that
one.
Is what really makes that bill go up.
Yeah, they each had one, and I'm not going to get into all the ugly details, but you know, we felt afterwards really good about it. You could see the difference, but at the same time, when you're looking at a bill, when they're telling you it could be $500, it could be $1,100, you're going $1,100 to brush their teeth, and it's obviously more than that, but I can't wait to hear the show, because I think this is common for pet owners to have a lot of questions about what procedures, especially the expensive ones, you know, really are I don't want to say are worth it. Your animals are worth it, but how do you make sure you're not getting scammed, for example, that kind of a thing, you know?
Yeah, and that is a very good question. And I just had my cat's teeth cleaned as well, and I did some shopping around, and I found that there are some differences in what different places will charge you.
Is there anything funnier than that little patch on their forearm from where they had the anesthesia?
The
we call our cat, our girls, Baldy.
Yeah,
because they've got this
the shaved arm,
the shaved arm, where they do the anesthesia. But they're tough; they're really tough, and we do feel good about that one. But it's interesting if you Google veterinary scams. By the way, let me back up and say I don't know a single vet that I wouldn't trust. I really don't. I throughout our lives, we've known vets who are just great.
Yeah, same here.
But at the same time, I think there are questions about tumors, things like that. It's fair to ask questions. It's fair to know what you're getting into, and it's really, really tough. You know, you don't want the animal to suffer. It's hard because for me, if you've got pets, they are pretty much like children.
They are, and especially for someone like me who doesn't have children of her own, and I know a lot of people who feel the same. Now, Evan, I want to point out that Unleashed is a pre-recorded show just for this pilot, and it's already on a podcast.
Okay.
It's up on our website as of within the last 20 minutes.
Are we going to do it live at some point?
Yes.
I want to be here.
Here's where the listeners come in. We need your feedback. So either tune in tomorrow, and it's going to be rebroadcast Saturday and Sunday too. But give us your feedback, whether you listen to the podcast, listen to it tomorrow when it airs at noon, because it's your feedback that will determine, A, whether we go forward with this, if there's enough interest in the community, and B, what you'd like us to see done differently than we did in the pilot, if anything.
How's Dr. Harima?
He's great. He's great. I had met him for the first time when we did the show together. He's a youngish guy. Like I said, he's a Rondacoit native. And you can tell he really cares about animals. He was going to be here with us right now, but he's performing a surgery right now in his clinic. And he had some real good common sense advice, and I think he really does have a caring approach to the animals that he treats.
Now, as you mentioned, you know, for you, your pets are your kids.
Yeah.
And as someone who views our cats as our kids and my actual son as my son, you know, I look at my son, and we were very, very selective on finding a pediatrician.
Yeah.
Have you, throughout your life, been very selective on finding veterinarians?
I have, and I've been lucky. Right now, my cat goes to a place that has just treats cats and pocket pets.
Cats and pocket pets?
Gerbils, hamsters.
Well, they don't really advise you to carry them around in your pocket. They're saying
that's just kind of a...
I've never heard that term. That's interesting.
Kind of a marketing term, probably, because I know that my cat will freak out if she... And I have nothing against dogs, but if she goes into a waiting room full of barking dogs, and that's one less stressor.
Oh, yeah.
And I think, too, that in any veterinarian that treats cats, and there are some in the Rochester area who treat cats exclusively, they really specialize in felines. And felines and canines, they're not the same set of circumstances.
Interesting you say that. Our vet, we take him to, is cats exclusively. That's the name of it.
Yeah.
And they are wonderful. No, we've had nothing but a good experience. So for our listeners, tomorrow, the noon hour will be the show. And what's the name of the show again?
The show is Unleashed, and we hope you pull up a chair, listen with your friends, tell your animal loving friends about it, and by all means, give us your feedback. Do you like it? Do you not like it? What do you want to hear going forward? And is there enough interest?
Yeah, can you see in the future if assuming there's going to be interest, and look, every time Pets comes up on this show, the phone just doesn't really stop ringing.
Yeah.
Will you look to bring in more audience questions?
Absolutely. Yeah. Just the way you do, Evan, through social media, Twitter, Facebook, however the questions come. And that's going to really determine, and we've already heard from some people who know the show is coming, and they already had some pre-feedback for us and what they would like to see in the future. So we know there's a lot of great stories out there. If you have stories about an animal that's touched your life in a particular way, whatever it is, let us know about it.
Facebook.com/UnleashedPetShow.
Yes.
Facebook.com/UnleashedPetShow if you want to check it out there. And Beth, before I let you go, can I circle back to something you and I talked about a couple of months ago?
Yeah.
Beth was on our program for Rochester's Favorite Books. And you mentioned a book about animals, right? What was the book?
Book about animal communication. Well, there wasn't one book in particular, but I've read multiple books on the topic.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
about how we communicate with our animals.
What do you... I mean, be careful here. I mean, I've always thought animals can understand more than we give them credit for.
Yes.
But what did you learn from your reading?
Well, and I know this might be stretching it for some people, there are those who believe that animals communicate through imagery. not vocally, although some animals can understand vocal commands, obviously, but that they communicate with one another and with humans, although a lot of us don't know they're doing it
through
imagery.
But what kind of imagery?
An image you get in your mind of something that you want or are thinking about. Like a psychic kind of connection.
Oh, okay.
I was trying not to use that word because I know you're...
Because some belittle the word, but you're saying that that's the idea, that they are trying to communicate mentally that way.
And there are people who call themselves animal communicators who claim to be able to decipher what an animal is thinking.
Do you think they can?
I don't know that a lot of them can, but I know one woman in particular who told me some things about my cat that she could not have known.
You know, like your cat loves Scrabble.
She said, and I'd not met her, and I was talking to her on the phone, and she said, your cat has a cat friend. It's a black cat who lives one apartment down and two over, and she looks at this cat over the balcony, and that's exactly what was happening.
There was no way to know that.
I don't think so.
Without mining your Facebook page, without you knowing it.
That was pre-Facebook.
Okay, that was before Facebook. All right, tomorrow, noon hour, and we're excited about it. For our listeners who may be familiar with every Friday is a different theme on Connections. The fourth Friday of every month is Innovation Friday, but the first hour tomorrow will be Unleashed. Beth, Dr. Harima, we can't wait to listen. And again, I know it's going to come back. So we'll come back and talk to you live and hopefully have more interaction with our listeners because I know people will have questions that they want answered.
Thanks so much. Thanks for the time, Evan.
All right, Beth. We will see you tomorrow. Now, we're going to transition the conversation from pet imagery. I wouldn't say psychics, Beth. I didn't use the term. But to something far more pressing for the moment here. A lot happening right now today in education. And frankly, the last several weeks have been packed when it comes to what's coming out of Albany and some of the responses to Albany. And tonight at 5:50, from 5:50 to 6:30, there's going to be a rally in front of the Minerva DeLand School and then a forum on education in the Minerva DeLand School auditorium from 7 to 8:30 tonight. And they're going to feature lawmakers, the Fairport Superintendent Bill Calla, retired Superintendent Howard Mafucci from East Rochester, school board presidents, teachers, etc. And there's a couple of teachers in studio with me now who are going to give me a sense for what's coming up tonight. Let me introduce them now. John Baines from Fairport is here. John, nice to see you.
Delighted to be here, Evan.
Well, thanks for taking the time. Also in studio is Emmy Thevenason.
Thevenason.
Oh, that was so close. I mean, that's a long last name. Emmy Thevenason is here from Spencerport.
Yes.
And you're here because, first of all, you're going to be attending tonight?
I'll be attending tonight, and then we are hosting a similar forum on the west side March 19th.
Okay. March 19th, and that'll be in Spencerport?
Yes.
What was the root of these events? Do we know who was responsible for putting these rallies and forums together?
Well, I think this is a grassroots effort put together by teachers from across the state in response to the governor's budget proposal. The sense of urgency has been driven by the timeline for the budget. As you know, since David Paterson was governor, the governor has more power in that he or she can attach to the budget legislative proposals and sort of play chicken with the legislature and say, either take it or leave it. And of course, years ago, for your listeners who remember, we never had on-time budgets. But one of the reasons why the budgets have been on time is this ability of the governor to force the legislature to vote up or down on the whole package,
right,
take it all or not. So
right,
in this budget proposal of the governor's are some true poison pills for the future of public education. And so there's a sense of urgency and with respect to educating our community so that they understand the implications of this proposal, which could become law in a very short order.
All right, I'm going to do my best to play devil's advocate here because the governor is not here and his staff are not here. And I know there have been some questions about what they're doing and why. I'm going to do my best on that. Now, I also want to go back to, I looked up stories that I did for television news in 2004. And I remember Bill Calla at the time. I think he was the superintendent at the time in Fairport, right?
He was, I think.
Okay, so Bill has migrated around a bit. He's back in Fairport now. And at the time, he was saying that late state budgets are very, very difficult because you can't really plan for a May budget vote without knowing how much state aid you get. You plan for too much and you get less and you're in real trouble. But if you want to plan in sort of really conservative and austere terms, you might lose the opportunity to expand or maintain programs or many other things. Well, now you've got these state budgets four in a row on time. But what John is talking about, I think, is more evidence of the fact that there really are three men in a room. And that's the old cliche. You heard Preet Bharara say it after Sheldon Silver was indicted. And you heard Joe Morelli on this program last week saying he thinks that's overblown. It's not really three men in a room. But when John's talking about one single budget document that has to be voted on up or down, essentially, that's often hammered out behind closed doors by the leader of the Senate, the leader of the Assembly, and the governor. Maybe a few other parties, but not many, many more. And John, your concern, I guess, is that when that's done that way, and you can't vote individually up or down on an educational funding piece or all of these individual components, that puts pressure on the law, on the legislature, essentially to pass something that they may not feel comfortable with?
Well, number one, if as devil's advocate, you're doing a good job, and you're better looking than the governor, Evan, let's be honest. But the I think when Bill Kallas said that in 2004, that predated the court ruling that permitted this new budgeting process, mm-hmm. and he was
That's
right
true.
Then. Interestingly enough, in this particular budget cycle, what the governor has done has made a budget proposal, and he has said to the school districts, I will give you X amount of money, and he's given a percentage, but he hasn't done the runs. He hasn't done the state aid runs. So effectively, we are in exactly the situation that you described in 2004. Only it's a double down situation where the districts can't plan because there's been no run made, so they know what the finances are when they come through. It's sort of pig in a poke, you know, you accept what I want, and then later on I'll tell you what kind of aid you're going to get. That continues to be a reality. But again, the what he wants, and if you want to go over for your listeners some of the elements of this proposal, they include, for instance, the removal of evaluation of principals of our schools from the local school. I mean, this is a major issue of local control. Our school boards are elected to manage our schools for our communities. These are community schools. And yet, in the governor's proposal, a principal or a teacher will have 85% of his or her evaluation will be removed from the local school district's ability to determine, so that 50% will be on a test, and that's not clear. We know these tests are not valid. We know they have no essential value for children, particularly the 3 through 8. We're talking about the 3rd through 8th grade exams now. And then he has a proposal that outside observers will come in and evaluate the principals and evaluate the teachers for 35 of the 50% that's determined by observation. So it would be as if we essentially are handing over the determination of the quality of our schools to one force, the tests, which have been manipulated, the cut scores have been manipulated. They can tell any story you want them to tell, and they certainly have told a story. They're really a Trojan horse for telling the big lie that public schools are failing. 10 of the best public schools in the country are within 15 miles of our rally tonight. And then to take away from our superintendents and our principals the ability to evaluate their own personnel. And I want Emmy to chime in, but you know, that's just one aspect of the proposal.
Well, but Emmy, the governor might say, but you're doing a great job as a teacher. You don't have to worry about it. And for our listeners, just a little bit on the background, John, you're a Fairport English teacher.
39 years a teacher.
Okay, and the president of Fairport Teachers. And Emmy, you've been teaching 7th and 8th grade English at Cosgrove Middle School in Spencerport for 12 years, right?
Yes.
All right, so Emmy, you're doing a great job. The governor would say you've got nothing to worry about. You're going to get a good evaluation.
Well, I think that if you look at all the proposals attached to the budget, I think it's pretty clear that, well, the governor said it himself. He said that public education is a monopoly that needs to be broken. So if you look at the proposals that he's attached, I don't know if any teacher can really feel safe or any community can feel safe that their school is not in harm's way. So we're having these events tonight in Fairport, next month in Spencerport, because we need people to come out and see their schools, visit their schools, go to a sporting event this spring, go to a concert, go to a musical. Like John just said, we have some of the best schools in the country right here locally. And the test scores that he's using to drive the agenda, to get the public concerned that schools are failing, they're manipulated. We can't see the tests. Teachers have had to sign gag orders when administering them for the last 2 years. We had 77% of kids, quote, passing just in 2010. And now on these top secret exams, 4 years later, we only have 31% passing. Clearly these tests are being used to manipulate public opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're here to talk about events tonight in Fairport. And if you want to join the program, I see the phone ringing. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994, at Evan Dawson on Twitter. We've already got a couple of comments there. We're going to try to get to those. But once again, John, the events tonight. What's happening tonight if people do want to get involved?
We're so excited to host in Fairport and show our Fairport pride. We're hosting the event at Minerva DeLand School, which is a gem of a school. It's located in the Village on Hurlbut Road in Fairport. It's a ninth grade academy. It used to be the high school at Fairport briefly back in the 60s. And we will be having a positive picket, having a lot of fun out front, with affirmative statements about the essential nature of public schools, that public schools are the lifeblood and the heart of American democracy. They are the portal for citizens in this country to enter into the middle class, stay in the middle class, and move upwardly socially and intellectually and personally. So we are unabashedly out tonight to put a message out, just as I assume that our friends who love public radio, and by the way, I never listened to anything but 88.5 and 1370, I could tell you the entire schedule. Public radio is, for me, is an essential thing, but I would argue that public schools are much, much more essential. And it's not to say that public radio isn't essential, but that in fact, that the public school is the way that our communities can provide for their children a better future. And one of the themes that I think that the governor doesn't understand, maybe because of his background from the five boroughs, is that our public schools are our communities. When you attack the public schools in Hilton, you're attacking the Hilton community. When you attack the public schools in Wayne or Ontario, town of Ontario, New York, you're attacking the community. Americans, particularly in upstate New York, identify profoundly with their school district as an identifier and a source and point of pride. And that's why we have such a robust tradition of school board service by our school board leaders. Tonight, Jody Siegel will be on our panel. She's director of the Monroe County School Boards. Jody Allison will be serving on our panel tonight. She is the president of the HFL School District School Board. Mm-hmm. And she's a very, very proud to be there as well. We have Senator Rich Funke, who we're so proud of him, and the Republicans in the majority who have recently announced that they're going to eliminate gap elimination, which for your viewers is the little game being played of giving money to school districts that they're promised and taking it back. Fairport alone has lost $30 million over the recent 4 years, and there's been $40 billion, I think. That could be wrong. I'm an English teacher. I'm not always perfect with my stats, but there's been billions of dollars lost to education throughout the state. And so we're so excited to have new leadership in Albany, particularly provided by Senator Funke and Senator Flanagan, who Senator Funke has invited to join us tonight. I guess it's going to be tough for him to get there. And so that's kind of what tonight is all about.
How many people do you expect?
We expect to sell out the auditorium. We've set up a screen in the gymnasium. We can accommodate up to 2,500 people. And we look forward to welcoming them. The Fairport teachers will be hosting. We've got coffee and cocoa, and we're going to wear our woolies and spend some time outside and then really share a great night of celebrating the beauty of public schools.
Now, if you want to attend tonight, you need to really get there when, John?
Well, we're running a bus service from East Rochester Schools. If you're familiar with the East Side, you can access the East Rochester School parking lot from either Washington Street off of Fairport Road or Main Street. They're both controlled by lights as you come off the expressway on Fairport Road. And then you turn on a side street. From Main, you turn on Woodbine, and from Washington, you turn on Ivy Street. I grew up in East Rochester, so I know the lay of the land very well there and live there now. If we also, that's for people from the East, from the West, people from the East, we're running a bus from Fairport High School and Martha Brown School, both located on Aralt Road. There is parking at the Minerva DeLand lot, but it will fill up quickly. There's parking at the Johanna Perrin Middle School across the street and the Brooks Hill School, which is essentially across the street. We ask people to carpool. We expect a big turnout. And yes, get there early. Let's get together and talk about the joy of teaching and being public educators and be together and support each other. Activities begin at 5:50. The forum, the rally will end at 6:30. We will gather in celebration, and then at 7 promptly we'll begin our forum with questions from the audience. We ask the audience to come with your questions for our panelists, and we'll promptly end at 8:30.
So that's tonight, and you're hearing from John Baines, Fairport teacher. Emmy Thevenason is a teacher in Spencerport. Similar forum next month when, Emmy?
Very similar, Thursday night, March 19th. And we, too, are hoping to have our lawmakers there. We've been communicating with Assemblyman Lawrence and Senators Ort and Robach. And we'll have a similar panel, also fielding questions and concerns from the people in the audience.
Okay. And so here's a question that Mark writes to the program. He says, I understand the point these teachers are making, but I want to know how would they evaluate teachers?
What a great question. And, you know, I think that public education should welcome the tough questions. You know, I think that the number one way to evaluate a teacher is at the point of engagement, to put an experienced and insightful individual in the room with a teacher working directly with children. The essential data point is the observable conduct of a teacher managing a situation. If we think about the role of nurses and doctors or even parents, if we would ever consider evaluating a parent as a parent without observing the parent, it would be absurd. So the most important data point is that. And then I think that there are other more objective measures that can be used, that the teacher can be assessed for his or her level of commitment to developing his or her skills through professional development, through engaging in professional learning communities, through supporting the collaborative endeavor that is modern public education. It's no longer a one-room schoolhouse out there. Teachers work in the form of teams. And I think that the results on appropriate assessments should be part of the mix. And I think that quite frankly, this is a controversial idea, but I've been teaching 17-year-olds for 39 years. I think for the older children, we ought to let the children at least have some level of evaluation or input, because I don't know a teacher doesn't want to get better. So, you know, the main point of assessing teachers is to help them become better. I don't know a teacher who wants to be poor. I don't know a teacher who wants to go home at night saying, I wasn't very good today. Every teacher I know wants to be a better teacher. And so I think the assessment or the evaluation practice has to lead to that outcome. Right now, what we have is a number. So we say, okay, you, Evan, you're a 79. You, Emmy, you're a 68. John Baines, you're a 64 out of 100. Based on junk science and some pretty bogus metrics, often involving students that are not even taught by the teacher. Many of the teachers who are evaluated today, probably 50% of our teachers are being evaluated by data that is collected on students they do not teach. So you're
on exams that no one's allowed to see and no one's allowed to talk about.
Yeah.
Well, if you want to join the conversation, 844-295-TALK. In a few minutes, we're going to broaden the conversation. We're going to bring in the folks from the Warner School of Education at the University of Rochester. They have an event coming up in a couple of days, a forum called Why Teach? Can you guys stick around as we talk about that? Are you on? How tight is your schedule?
I want to talk about Why Teach, because I want all you people out there who are afraid of teaching or hearing negative things about it, I want an opportunity to tell you that it's the greatest experience that you can have. It's the greatest joy. And I look forward to meeting. I'm a graduate of the University of Rochester. I look forward to meeting these professors and sharing that time with them.
Okay. So, and Emmy, can you stay for
sure.
But let me also ask you this, Emmy, and get a little closer to the mic there. There you go. Let me ask you this then. As we talk about why teach, we also look at what's going on in this battle for educational funding, for a system that creates an evaluation system that there can be an agreement that is fair. And we've heard Rich Onyebene, other teachers of the year, write a letter to the governor saying, we are supposed to be the top teachers in the state, and we feel under assault. We feel that this has become personal. So when we talk about why teach in just a moment, one of the questions is, if you teach, do you feel that way? Do you feel sort of under assault by Albany?
I think that the profession does feel that way right now. And what you just shared, seven teachers of the year in New York State wrote a letter. You know, anyone can Google it and read it for themselves, where they said, you have made us feel like the enemy. There was also just a Gallup poll not too long ago that came out saying that teachers are at an all-time low for professions, for engagement, because they feel their opinions aren't valued and they feel that they aren't trusted. Those two aspects at work, that you're not trusted and that your opinions aren't valued. But I think we can change that. I think that what's going on in Fairport tonight, what's going to happen in Spencerport next month, and these events are similar to events that have been happening all across the state, are going to help to change that. And yes, young people in college should go into teaching. Another statistic relevant right now, enrollment in teacher prep programs is at an all-time low. So with the governor, who seems to want to fire as many teachers as possible, a good question is, who's coming into those classrooms?
Well,
and maybe the University of Rochester professors can address that question.
Well, and look, I think you both raise an interesting point, which is that teachers do want to get better. Sometimes we kind of bifurcate this discussion in, so you're either for being able to fire teachers who are not performing well, or no teacher should be fired. I think that's sort of a false choice. But my question for you both would be then, look, no one's going to name names here, but everybody who's ever had a job anywhere could look around their office and say, yeah, this person isn't really cutting it the way they should. That doesn't mean that we ought to be laying people off or firing them, but is there an adequate system that allows teachers to improve? Emmy, I'll start with you. Are teachers getting better, and do they have the resources to get better?
I believe that they do. I think that everything that John mentioned a few minutes ago about how to evaluate a teacher, I agree with that. But I would also say that you have strong teachers when you have you start in the classroom and you grow out from there. When you have strong department chairs leading to a culture of collaboration, strong building level administrators who are making sure that those teachers have everything that they need, strong district level administrators who are advocating, that's how you have a profession that's constantly improving. I was also a student at the Warner School, and I'm going to paraphrase something that Steve Eubing said. He said, the role of an administrator is to build bridges and take down the walls that stand in the way of or lead to good teaching. So when you have all of those pieces, you have a profession that's improving and teachers are getting better all the time. I think that's what you do as a teacher. If you're a teacher, you have accepted the role of being a lifelong learner as well.
And John, isn't there maybe also a lack of focus in this kind of a conversation on the years before tenure? You know, Bill Calla and others have said, look, the most important thing you can do is make sure that you are hiring well and that that tenure doesn't come to those who aren't making the grade. But Bill is essentially saying that is happening pretty effectively, that teachers who get tenure tend to be pretty highly functioning teachers. And if they then struggle, the goal would be to help them improve, but make sure on the front end you're not giving teachers tenure who shouldn't have tenure.
Well, that's absolutely the purpose of the probationary period. You know, let's go back. I'm going to address that, Evan, but I want to go back to this notion about assessment.
Yeah.
If you teach a child and you look into the eyes of a child and you disappoint a child, and if you've ever disappointed a child, or you, Emmy, I know I have. I have three children. I have eight grandchildren. And when you are not living up to their expectations for you to be present and available to them. So I've never needed anyone to evaluate me. My students are evaluating me every second of every day, and I'm acutely aware of that, and living up to what they deserve. And when we talk about tenure, a lot of people don't realize that all of our administrators have tenure, and they need it, and they should have it. They're hired, and they're evaluated, and they're granted tenure because they are entitled to protection due process protection in the case that in case of their performance not being perceived by someone as being at a high level. Now, what happens is most people counsel themselves out or leave when they can't get it done. This is not something everybody can do. And trust me, if you want to take a job in Fairport, we'll give you about $36,000 a year. You'll work about 65 hours a week. You'll be observed. You'll be expected to perform at a super high level. You'll have to get a master's degree either prior to teaching or immediately thereafter. And the parents will expect everything of you. The kids will expect everything of you. And if that sounds like a walk in the park, come and join us. Get yourself that degree and start making that $37,000 a year. You know, when I drive by our schools, our second grade, third grade, and fourth grade teachers are in their classrooms at 5:30 and 6 o'clock at night. Everybody's got an anecdote about the teacher who doesn't appear to be working as hard as the other teacher. But I assure you that in particularly in our most overstressed teaching community, our elementary teachers in this state, their job has become nigh on undoable due to the pressures, the expectations, the teaching to the test mentality of so many of the leaders. So, you know, they're the toughest evaluators of teachers in New York State have always been teachers themselves. And I try to get teachers constantly to try to give themselves a little bit of a break, but they won't do it because they're perfectionists.
Well, I've got to get a 60-second break in. If you're waiting on the phone, we're going to get to you. The rest of this hour is going to fly. Emmy Thevenason is here from Spencerport. John Baines from Fairport previewing tonight's Rally and Forum for Public Education in Fairport. And then we're also going to talk about why teach what the Warner School at Rochester, University of Rochester, that's the word, is doing. Let's get to a break and right back in 60 seconds. That is why it is just about as short of a break as you'll find in radio. We're already back here on Connections, and the hour is flying as we talk education. We've been talking about this event in Fairport tonight, and I want to talk about an event coming up 2 days from now. The Warner School of Education at the University of Rochester is hosting an event, noon to 2, with a subject called Why Teach? They're going to feature examples of innovative teaching practices and many subject areas, a panel discussion from educators and more. And here to tell us more about that is Professor Joanne Larson from the University of Rochester. Nice to see you.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so we got the broad sketch of it, but what's the goal on Saturday?
I think the goal is really to remind people that teaching is a valuable profession. It's a very important profession. You know, the care of the hearts and minds of our children. And a lot of people less people have been considering teaching as a career. So we really want to remind people to do it.
Yeah, what changes have you seen in that regard? We hear it once in a while that numbers are down a bit, but what are you seeing?
People are concerned about how the kind of attack on teachers and teaching that's been happening nationwide and certainly in New York State, and external constraints, low budgets, increasing pressure for teachers to do more and more and more and more with regard to standardization and testing.
All right, Joanne. Well, before I get to the phones, because we've been talking about some of these related issues this hour with a couple of public school teachers who passionately told us why they say, yes, teach, when you say, why teach. What do you say to why teach? What you just described can be tough for people to hear.
It is tough to hear. It's tough to experience. I think why I teach and why the teachers that I work with teach is because that spark in a child's eye when they've learned something is irreplaceable. And the dedication and care of our youth is is why we need to have high-quality teachers.
I will only speak from my own experience that's about 7 weeks old now, and I'm just nothing but an adjunct at Nazareth. And in 7 weeks, I've gotten a taste for why the three people in this room love what they do. It really is remarkable.
It's remarkable because people are from young to old. As an adult, I mean, I see that spark in adults. But, and I've also seen it in young children, that moment they figure out that, that those words, that marks on the paper is a word, is magical. And you can't, there's nothing better than that.
Well, okay, so if you want to get involved noon to 2 on Saturday, what do you want the public to know, Joanne? How can they participate?
Come down, support teachers that do come, but also if you're interested in a very meaningful and fulfilling career, come and hear what we have to say. We'll have all of our professors who run different degree programs and subject areas there to talk to you, and current teachers there to say why they teach.
And tell us again where it's going to be?
It'll be at LaChase Hall in room 215.
LaChase Hall, room 215, and you can jump online and find more. LaChase Hall, room 215 on Saturday, noon to 2, for Why Teach. Let's get some phone calls in on this subject on various topics, because our panel should be able to answer from a number of angles here. I'm going to start with Stefan in Rochester. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I'm part of the Career and Teaching Program for the Rochester City School District, which invests in our new teachers with an intensive mentoring program that's a peer assistance and review program. So our mentors are 90% support. We match teachers in the same tenure area and when we can in the same building with new teachers. We visit them weekly. We engage in reflective practices with them. And at the end of the year, we have a voice. Our fellow teachers have a voice in that new teachers' continuing employment, and we're run by a joint panel of administrators and teachers. So I'd love for the panel to address the kind of support a teacher gets once they're thrown into this profession, which is changing and is subject to the vagaries of the political climate like never before. We in Rochester are trying our best to support our teachers through that transition, and I'm wondering if your guests have found that to be an important factor in attracting people to the profession, knowing that they'll have someone to work with them, to guide them through, to have their back.
It's a great question and a great point, and I'm going to start with Professor Joanne Larson and go around the room. What do you think?
Absolutely, having mentors, but other teachers especially to talk to about what you're doing and reflect on your practice is a key part of becoming better and better over time and reflecting.
What do you think, Emmy?
I think that having that support from your peers in a program like the one that the caller described is incredibly important. If you look at the statistics that at least 50% of teachers leave within the first 5 years, it can be very isolating. It's extremely overwhelming, especially of two English teachers here today. That workload that you take home with you when the day ends, the amount of emails that you get teaching right now. We need more programs like that.
John?
Yeah, well, the cities has a model program, and that's at one end of the continuum, and there are districts all over the country, and I think we're a little more enlightened here in upstate New York, but even near us in upstate New York, that still have the notion that you go in the room and you graduated from a certain program, and here's your plan book. And I think that the efforts of the graduate education community, the professional learning community philosophy that's now taken root in our schools. I just started teaching a class this week. I was teaching other teachers reading for analysis, and I'm kicking myself that I hadn't been teaching this class for the last 20 years, because that spark, that joy, that excitement that we had just in a room reading Ring Lardner, reading John Updike, reading Willa Cather, reading Ursula Le Guin, and just delighting in the joy of learning. And it takes away that isolation that people have and that frustration. So much of teaching is collaborative now. 30 years ago, it would be rare for two adults to be in a room. And the skill set that's required is highly, highly collaborative now in the modern school. So teachers must understand there's no close the door. and do my thing. We are working as a community. And the important point there is that the children experience a community of adults. It's shallow and selfish for the adult to say, these are my kids. That child, even if the child's in kindergarten, will interact with about 7 or 8 adults on a daily basis in the school setting. And so those adults have a requirement that they are presenting to that child a kind of thoughtful team approach so that there aren't dissonant messages sent. And that's part of building capacity as a profession.
All right, let's try to get a couple more listener comments in before the hour is out. Maggie in Rochester. Go ahead, Maggie.
Hi. We must remember that we are dealing with a bully in our governor. He's trying to outbully Chris Christie and the other Republican governors who have run roughshod over their people with their agenda. So when you're dealing with a bully, you have to get your strategy in line to do that. And I hope our legislature is up to the job. Thank you.
Well, Maggie, thanks for the call. First of all, I know the public school teachers here who are going to be at the rally tonight in Fairport, they probably agree with your sentiment, and they have invited lawmakers to help explain how they're trying to deal with it in the legislature. But let me ask Professor Joanne Larson from the University of Rochester. That's strong words we're hearing. And, you know, I don't know if you remove yourself and don't take a position on that kind of a comment, but again, when you talk about why teach, you hear why teach, teach in New York, but some people say the governor's acting like a bully.
Personally, I would agree that he is. I think it's a part of a larger agenda of dismantling public education, which I would disagree with. I think that we need to remember that this is about children and our youth, and that the origins of public education in the United States was for the common good, not for the good of Bill Gates or the Koch brothers. So I think we need to stand up to that. And we need teachers who are willing to. I'm glad to see teachers rallying tonight. And, you know, I was wondering at what point teachers were going to go, okay, I'm not going to do what's wrong. I'm going to stand up for our children.
Well, and Phyllis writes to the program, and I wonder if our panel can comment on this. She says, my daughter got a teaching degree, but then couldn't find a job. She had to travel a long way to another state to find work. That's the elephant in the room you are not discussing. Professor?
That is true, that the job market is, you know, there are teaching positions, not necessarily locally, but I think that there's also an argument that Cuomo forgets that he's, you know, cutting funding. And so you're cutting teaching positions. It's not that you don't need those teachers. So I think that we'll end up with a shortage at a certain point in New York State.
So in other words, getting into this field is not necessarily a dead end locally.
No, I don't think so.
On the other hand, it is true that every single school district in Monroe County has declining enrollment. The only district I'm aware of that has robust growth in its enrollment is the Victor schools, they have excellent schools there. They also have an excellent tax situation there that attracts families. But so the fact that we have declining enrollment, and then the fact that they've starved the public sector and villages, towns, but also the school districts being starved from two ends. On the one end, the ability of the local school board to levy taxes has been limited, and then the aid has been starved, and the gap elimination aid has taken aid away. So it's starving it from both sides. That's resulted 4 years ago in Fairport, they laid off 70 employees, 40 teachers. It's interesting, since Barack Obama's president, the public sector has shrunk dramatically. A lot of people don't seem to understand this when they call him the crazy names they call him. It has been in the private sector that all the growth has been, and the public sector has shrunk. And so as a result, our teachers are very talented teachers. Unfortunately, there's not a huge pool of them because not many people are going into our programs. But our very talented teachers are finding that when we have teachers being laid off in districts, gifted teachers who live to teach being laid off, that's a product of declining enrollment and a product of the draconian budget environment in New York.
All right, I got 90 seconds. Let's make sure we preview the events coming up. So tonight, 30 seconds. John, happening tonight that you want people to hear about?
We really want you to come bring your questions. We're going to mic the audience. We have great legislative leaders in Senator Funky and Assemblyman Johns. We have Bill Calla on our panel. We have a parent. We have a student, a young man, Max Davis from Honeyway Falls. Come on out to Fairport.
Ask tough questions.
Ask the toughest darn questions. Let's have a little discourse. The public schoolhouse is a place where discourse must be polite and civil but robust, and that's the lifeblood of American democracy.
Okay, that's tonight. when, John?
5:50, we rally. We're going to be walking in front of the Minerva DeLand School until 6:30. At 7, our forum will begin, and the forum will end promptly at 8:30.
Okay, Emmy, a similar event. If you can't come tonight, next month,
come
when?
Tonight to Fairport. Next month, Thursday the 19th, come out to Spencerport, where we'll have a similar panel with our lawmakers, with other stakeholders in this conversation about education. But in the meantime, to stop this conversation about our failing public schools, go visit a school. Go to an event this spring. Go to a sporting event. Go see a musical. Go to a band concert.
All right. And Saturday, why teach? Noon to 2. Where?
At LaChase Hall, University of Rochester, room 215.
And who do you want to see there? Who is it really targeted to, Professor?
People who love the joy of learning.
And prospective teachers?
Prospective teachers, absolutely.
All right. Well,
career changers.
Have a great day Saturday.
Thank you.
Thanks for taking the time to come in. Thanks for coming in and letting us ask some tough questions, and we're going to keep doing that, John.
Delighted.
Thanks to Emmy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Talk to you again soon. Short break, and we continue the conversation with you on member-supported public radio next hour. Stay with us.